Session number 11268, rule 4.
Mr. Joseph Clements, Reel 4. We were talking about your time at Anzac when you were there, and just tidying up, really. I believe you saw the man with the donkey, or...?
I'm pretty sure I did. It wasn't until afterwards when we heard about it that we realised we had seen a man going up there with a mule, I think it was. At least we thought it was a mule, and bringing somebody down. But just a couple of times. I didn't see any, not for any length of time, I didn't see him. Because we weren't there too long.
Did you get your rations and water while you were there at Anzac?
Yeah, they're supplied by the Australians. Yeah, what came up for them was issued to us as well.
Did you suffer at all from thirst while you were there?
No. The only thing was bad teeth. Not so much there. It was when we went round to the other end.
I'll pick that up later. Yes. Then. So you're not sure how long you were there. Do you remember anything about coming off?
No, just that we marched down to the beach one day and we embarked and off we went and landed at Cape Ellis. And
which beach did you land at? Do you know?
No, I couldn't say. No.
How did you land?
Well, ordinary lighter from the boat we were on. So many went on lighters each side and they took us and it was much just stepping out the lighter onto the shore. There was no. No active there. The activity had gone further inland.
And whereabouts did you go at Ellis? Where were you moved to?
Well, I don't know, but I remember going. We must have had a bit of time to ourselves there. We went up to Settlebar Forts and saw them. We saw a big lump of. We were told it was a lump of the Queen Elizabeth's 15-inch shells that it hit. They were hit near it. A big, tremendous lump of steel there.
What state were the forts in when you saw them? What state were they in when you saw them, the forts?
The forts? Well, the job to tell. The buildings there weren't what we're used to seeing, and solid, perhaps, brick and clay and stuff like that. And we thought it perhaps looked a bit rough-looking to what we're used to at home here. But I suppose it must have been solid enough, any rate.
And whereabouts did you go into the line?
Well, no, that's another thing. I can't remember any particular sections of the line except one. But that didn't come straight away. I don't really know that we ever knew which part of the line. It wasn't issued out. We were going up Sunset Line. We just went, or we were taken there.
Could we look at the sort of conditions then, generally during that summer, rather than sort of try and pin it down to one place?
Yes.
When you were in the front line, what did the front line look like? As far as you, I mean, what depth? What?
Between us and the opposing line, do you mean? Or
I mean, what was your actual trench like?
Well, that was as you made it mostly. You see yourselves, and you either improved on them and then or. They got worse, but they were about, 6 feet, roughly 6 feet deep, and the soil taken out of the trench was into sandbags and put on the parapet in the front, built up another three feet or more, you see, and the others were put on the back, just for back protection. And
were they in bays?
Yes, but roughly... might have been 25 yards a bay before you got a recess or something like that, you see.
What about the... did you have a fire step?
Fire step? Oh, yes. Yes, you had to have that to stand because every morning on daybreak or just before dawn, everybody was called to. They had what was called
stand. I'll come back to that. Yeah, that's stand two. Yeah. What about barbed wire? Did you have much barbed wire out in front of you?
Not so much barbed wire as a concertina wire that was buried in the parapet itself, in the loose soil. So it's been difficult for them to have pulled it away, or get tangled up in it. But that was the whole length of the line, really. Pretty well everybody was the same.
And about how far away were you from the Turkish front line?
Well, we'd take an average of 150, 200 yards, perhaps.
Would you build a special machine gun post for your machine gun?
Or would you usually, yes. We took a part of the parapet out and then put that steel plate in front, as I told you, that had an opening so you could traverse. Not much up and down, but sideways. And then packed that round with sandbags and made an overhead cover to it. But you weren't actually under it, because it wasn't the parapet wasn't deep enough to go too far in with a thing like that. It was just frontal protection there for the chap behind the gun.
What about dugouts? Did you have any dugouts at all?
When we went back, after we went out of the front line.
So you had dugouts in the reserve?
In the reserve, yeah, but you made yourself. Perhaps two of you would be together, three, four. I've seen them with half a dozen or more in this dugout, and that was only a shallow excavation we made ourselves, and we only draped a couple of waterproof sheets over it.
So it didn't have any overhead cover from artillery?
Nothing solid.
What about rations you got while you were at the thing? How would they come up?
The Indian mule team brought them up, Indian Army. They had a mule team, and they were a ration party. They brought up water and other stuff as well, you know, the more solid food. But they didn't have much change for the first, I think, as I always say, 3 months. We were on biscuits for all that time. Had nothing else but biscuits and bully beef.
And what were the biscuits like?
I mean, hard. They're hard. And occasionally, perhaps people don't realise that we had to make our own cup of tea, you know, hunt around and find a bit of scrub to make a little bit of a fire and build up with them and boil up a drop of water and make a cup of tea. And occasionally, there was a bit of fat bacon came up. I didn't mean exactly fat bacon, but bacon came up. And we used to melt that down as well as we could. And then either we'd crumble the biscuits and put them in this bacon fat, or use some of the bacon fat and dip our, what they call 4x2, is the cleaning material for your rifle, dip that in and make a wick of it and make a light. See, that's how we done that. And
What state was the bully? You had bully a lot.
Bully was plenty of it, and it was all quite nice.
And it melted.
But
was there any problem with the heat and it melting?
Well, I can't remember anything about that. I suppose we usually dropped in somewhere around in the trench, and that's shaded. It was out of the sun, direct sun rays. But it was stacked on the beaches, I believe, originally.
Did you get fed up of the biscuits and the bullies?
You're telling me I did.
What did you start to get after 3 months?
After 3 months, we nearly fell out of our, jumped out of our boots. They came up with a loaf was issued to last 7 men 2 days. A 2-pound loaf, perhaps, I don't know. They may have got a couple of slices each out of it, I forget now, something like that. That lasted 2 days. Then you might miss some boil and got biscuits again, then get another loaf.
So bread started to come up.
Yes.
Anything else?
No. We used to bargain with the Indian Army, who used to bring the rations up. They used to like our jam or a bit of bully beef, and they gave us some curry and stuff like that. It was a bit of an exchange. It all tasted quite nice.
But, have you tasted curry before?
Huh?
Had you tasted curry before?
I doubt it. But it was a change. It mixed in well with the bully, at any rate.
Did you, with that diet, I mean bacon and dry biscuits and salted bully beef, did you find thirst a big problem? Did you get enough water brought up for it?
They'd bring the water up for a while, up to a period. Then they laid pipes. And you had a point where you could collect this water from. somebody from each section went down with the water cans of some sort or other, I forget now what they were like, to collect the water. But, of course, the big thing about it was that I think Turks began to get an idea where these were, these water points. There was only a bit dicey going down there.
Was it shelling that was a danger when you went there?
Oh, sniping.
Sniping?
Yes. Or an occasional high explosive come over and shrapnel would follow it.
So did you get enough water then?
It seemed to, but we did, always looking around for a drop more, I think, because I doubt if we ever washed ourselves. Any water that came up was drunk.
What about any special rations, as they call them? Did you get any rum rations while you were there?
I'm not going to be definite about that, but I've got an idea. We had, in the early days, we had a little drop, but it wasn't regular, and it wasn't very often. But I'm not really perfect about that, because I didn't used to drink in those days, so if it came up, I gave it away.
What about cigarette ration? Did you smoke? Did you get a cigarette ration?
Yes, we'd get an issue, and then I'd get an issue. Lots of chaps got mail from home when we got so there, and my mother always used to send me 20 players out.
Were they better than the ones issued by the army, players?
I forget now what we got issued with the players. I think anything, as long as it smoked, that was it made us feel more content.
Did you smoke more when you were in the trenches, do you think, than you had done before?
Not in trenches. When you're back more in the reserve, you know.
Why didn't you smoke much in the trenches then?
Oh, well, you give yourself away too much.
At night?
You don't smoke at night time. No, don't put a light on. Well, you could if you like, but you liable to cause some trouble, bring some trouble on yourself.
What about in the day? Couldn't you smoke in the day?
We had smoke in the day, yes. But there wasn't all that number of cigarettes that you could smoke as many as you wanted to. They were more or less limited.
What about your equipment and uniform? Did you adapt? I mean, it was quite hot out there in the summer. Did you adapt your uniform at all?
Well, in the case of having to. We did get... we had pith helmets, but we discarded those, if I remember rightly, and mostly everybody wore a balaclava or a forage cap. And there were no tin hats about then, they hadn't arrived. And the sun helmets were too obvious, and, you know, made you a bit that much taller, so you could be seen easier. So I think pretty well everybody, either a forage cap or a balaclava.
And what about your trousers? Did you cut them down to shorts or anything like that?
No.
So you just wore them?
As they were issued, yes.
Did your uniform stand up to trench life well? I mean, it's quite a tough life.
It seemed to, yes. I think we went down, say we'd done a spell up in the line, might be 10 days, and then you go down for 10 days and might have a quick run round of what you've got and what you haven't got, what's worn out and what isn't worn out, and kind of a semi-kit inspection business, you see, anything you hadn't got, you were made up with that. But there was nothing on such and such a date you wore light clothing, another date you wore heavy clothing, not there isn't the regular army. But I'm going to tell you something about that as well, if you like. Mm-hmm. It might take a little bit of time, I don't know. Well, I would like a lot more, but I'm very ignorant. I hadn't run into life at all. And I found myself, when I used to take my clothes off to have a clean-up, and I found a lot of white little insects on me. See? And I couldn't make out what these were. In the shrubland, I thought it must be something off the bushes. So... Well, I used to get round the corner somewhere, out of sight, and take my tunic off and go all round the seams, shirt and everything. They were all in the seams with these little white insects. Well, eventually I found out that they were lice, of course. body lice. Well, I got worried, and I thought I was going to get into trouble by having these, you know, not thinking that everybody else in the same boat. So what I'd done one day, silly, I stripped down, I took my vest off, my cellular pants, they were called then, vest, pants, shirt, and I took them off and buried them. I thought, I'll get rid of them. But of course they were in the tunic as well, and the trousers all down the seams. I was just as bad off. Well, this particular day, we were down in reserve, and we were told of, we've got to go up with a party to help build another communication trench. So off we go, see, each one carrying a pick or a shovel. And the sergeant said to me, "Oh, Clemens, get your tunic off." All the others were, you know, a hot day. I said, "No, I'm all right, son." He says, "Get your tunic off, get stuck in it." Because I took my tunic off. Took my tunic off, had no shirt on. He says, "Where's your shirt?" So I told him the finish. I said, "Oh, it was full of insects, and then I burnt it, or buried it." Oh, he said, "You know what you've done, you're destroying government property." So that evening, the young officer in charge of the gun sections, he took us all, made us all form up around, and he told us the big crime I'd committed of destroying government property, and threatened, you know, we could be shot 3 times a week or something like that. But anyway, he said, "Everybody's the same, everybody's got the same." Well, I said, "I didn't know. I thought it was just me." And, you know, I was very self-conscious about it. And anyway, I got issued with some more clean clothing and got away with it. But that was just a little thing that may happen hundreds of times, I don't know. But that happened to me.
Well, the lice are a big nuisance. I mean, once you got found out what they were and sort of knew everyone else had them, did they irritate you with the ice or itch or scratch or bite?
Yeah, well, your everlasting rubbing like that. Every so often we'd have a skirmish with them. With three or four of us, we'd get one of these, we had some bait and fat and made a little torches, as you might say, with these, the 4x2 that you cleaned your rifles with. And then you'd take all your clothes off and run this lighted up, all up the seams, you see. Of course, some you killed, some you didn't, but you had to put it back on again, dead or alive. So you were never clear of them. The only thing was, they weren't in your hair much. Didn't seem to get too much in your hair, but they were on the body.
Did you get scabies or anything like that from them with the itching?
I can't remember that. I personally didn't, but I can't remember much about that.
What about, you mentioned you couldn't wash, or you didn't have much water,
didn't have much water to wash.
Did the officers try and make you wash and shave, or did they just accept that you
couldn't? Oh, no. They were as bad as we were. Those was a few. Few of the troops were a bit lucky. They were down on their trench extended down to the Dardanelles, see where the water was. And they used to get a nip in there, although they got shelled while they were in there. So there was it may have been all right, it may not have been.
Carry on.
No, I don't know what I was going to say now.
What about the latrines? What are latrine arrangements?
Oh, you had to dig those, diggers place at the back of the trench, and it was usually a little short entrance in and a turning off, and there it was. And before you left your trench, when your section was being relieved, you had to fill that all in.
What arrangement was the actual latrine? Was it a bar or a pole?
No, a bit of wood, whatever you could get hold of. Make a trench, small trench there, and a bar stood on a couple of tins or something like that. Just a bit of wood, anything you can get hold of.
Was there any paper supplied or anything like that?
No. No, there was some scrub grass growing around and things like that.
What about flies? Were they a nuisance to you?
They were. There were plenty of them about.
How were they a nuisance?
Well, they were. If you had a biscuit with a bit of jam on it there, the flies had more than you did of it. They were there before you could put it to your mouth.
Were there a lot of them?
Yes, there was.
Is there anything you could do about them?
Nothing you could do. Just flick about and just keep them away out of your actual nose and mouth and eyes, like, you know, just flicking around.
What about, were you aware of the presence of dead bodies, you know, between the lines or buried?
Oh, yeah, well, they were there. You could see them, quite a lot of them.
What state were they in?
Well, gradually decomposing. And if the wind was in the wrong direction, you were unlucky. I know there we watched one chap, I don't know if he was Turk or whether he was one of our own. He was within, actually 20 yards of where I was, in my spot on the there. And you watch him, he gradually got bigger and bigger, and then he went away to nothing. He gradually burst sort of business. And he was there for, quite a number of days.
And what was the smell like when the wind was your way?
Rotten.
What was it like, sort of thing? I mean, I know it's difficult to describe as
smell. Yeah, I don't know what to do. I suppose the worst of bad meat you've ever smelt, that was it.
Did it upset your dead bodies lying around like that?
No, things like that somehow didn't. I don't know why. I suppose you'd say, might have been me occasionally, but never. Well, I didn't myself, but I don't suppose I was much different to anybody else. It's kind of a thing you took in your stride. You knew it was there and happening.
And did the heat bother you at all?
Pardon?
The heat, did it bother you at all? I mean,
personally, no. I like the heat.
What about sort of the dysentery? Was there any problem with dysentery?
Yes.
That summer.
Yes, it was. That was a big. A big enemy of ours, or any troops, I should think. But I think I was, I never got a proper dose of dysentery at all. There's any amount of chaps, they'd be taken out of the front line and on the hospital ship and away, for a fortnight, 3 weeks, then come back again, whatever length of time it took to clear it up. I was one of the very fortunate ones. I don't exactly boast about it, but I feel bad that I landed on the peninsula, and I stayed there right up to the day of the evacuation. But I felt kind of a little pride in that somehow.
So you didn't have that problem. You said you did have some problem with your teeth, though. What was that?
Teeth? Oh, no. When you brought up biscuits, it was...
You didn't actually have toothache then?
No. I think they weren't doing much good to your teeth, biting these biscuits all the time.
So your health wasn't too bad as far as you were
concerned? No, it was very good, really.
Now, if you look at a typical day now, during that summer. If we start with Stand 2, you mentioned it before, what would you do at Stand 2? You were on the machine gun, of course.
You had your rifle and you had your place on the trench just the same as anybody else. On a Stand 2, everybody. You stood up on the fire step and you were supposed to be watching. Because we had the talk went round about Turkey, the Turks. They'd always attack at daylight. As soon as dawn come down. And we were always up there by that time in full force, you see. And you'd stand there nearly falling asleep, really, because we were doing hour on and hour off when we'd up the front line. That's hour for sleep and hour on watch continuously. When you come to another hour then, you were very just about asleep.
Did you actually look over the top or did you use periscopes?
We had not a great many periscopes. We had some between us. It wasn't policy to look over the top. They're not very far away from you.
If you looked over the top, sure you'd be at risk from snipers.
Very much so. Or even their front line is only, say, 150 to 200 yards away. And it's quite a good target then, 200 yards.
So after Stand 2, what would happen?
Well, then those who kept there until their hour was up. And the others went down and, got a bit of grub going. And we generally used to go in together, two or three of us do this and that. We all done them all together. and well, you could say comrades in arms, as they say.
So you'd have some breakfast.
Yeah.
And then what would you do during the day, you as a machine gunner? What was your,
Well, there wasn't much. It was just a matter of sitting and waiting. But you didn't take it much to pieces in case you wanted all of a hurry, see? But you check the your belts, the spare number of the guns. They looked after the belts, kept them filled up. There were 250 rounds in each belt. And the only thing was, would see all those were filled up properly and all ready for use, laid out properly in the cartridge box, so they came out without any hitches into the gun, you see. Checking it, well, once that was done, it was done. Then we had to go down, as I say, someone would go scouting around, find a drop of water somewhere or other. They'd borrow or steal it, whichever was easiest. And so the days just went on like that.
Would you what would you talk about amongst yourselves? Do you remember the sort of topic?
No, that was all used up in the first few days, I think. I met just hearing say that so and so got killed yesterday or last night. I see the stretcher bearers going down with him, and somebody got it in the leg. Somebody got hit. Three chaps got hit in their dugout behind the lines when we were down. They all get hit through the legs. One chap got it here through both. Wing one, through here, and out the other side.
This is up the thighs.
The snipers down behind the line, behind our lines. And then
was sniping a big problem then?
In the beginning, very big. Because evidently they'd dug holes under cover somewhere, under scrub bush or something, dug down there and taken rations and ammunition down there, and used to come up at night time and just fire one or two occasional shots at somebody where they could see a good target.
Were any of your friends killed by snipers in the front line?
Killed, well, a lot, I wouldn't say killed, but a lot of them were hit in various ways. I suppose some must have died afterwards, but not actually killed instantly. But they were hit and put out of action.
Did you have to be careful to keep your head down? Because you're quite a tall man for those days, certainly.
You certainly had to keep your head down.
Was there much artillery fire, especially, during the summer?
Yes. They used to send over high explosive shells and then follow them up with shrapnel. Now, talking of shrapnel, this last bore is a different thing from talking to shrapnel in that first bore, because there were special shells made for shrapnel. They were all filled with kind of a round pellets, and the cap was timed so that they fired a certain distance, but when it was about 100 yards short of that, this cap exploded and it scattered all these there in a big area. So they used to chase you out with high explosives first and then kind of follow up with this shrapnel.
So, did that cause casualties?
It did. I was very fortunate once. I know this high explosive came in there and I ducked like all the rest. We fell flat and then this shrapnel, when it came along, and I got hit in the middle of the back. But luckily it was, because they're round, and I suppose maybe in a bit more towards the end of its, as far as it will go, it hit on the crossing of the webbing of my equipment. I had to stop something there. I was glad it did anyway.